The John Age Project.
Trust no one. Trust no one. Trust no one.
Welcome, women, children, boys and girls, humans of all ages, or at least those of you who still identify as human. Welcome to the Anomic Age. I am your host, John Age, hailing proudly from parts unknown. We got a great show for you today. We got documentary filmmaker Michael Hansen coming up in a bit. We'll get into his most recently censored work, Killing Free Speech 2. Before we get into any of that, please check out AnomicAge.com. A lot of changes on the website in the last few weeks. Got a great news segment on there. It's been there for a while, but just in case you missed it, there's tons of great news on there. Please check the news segments out. We got a nice little slider carousel of the most recent guests. Well, actually, to be clear, all the guests. So we got all the guests going all the way back to the episode number one, all the way up to the current. We'll be rotating in and out of there. So odds are you're going to land on AnomicAge.com and see or hear from someone that you perhaps forgot or need to hear again or just is totally new and news to you. As well as there's the information breakdown segments that I've been doing, which I need to do another one this week. I haven't done that, and it's coming probably tonight if I can make that happen. Those are also available on there. I encourage you just to look back at all those old episodes. We're talking with Michael here for the second time. It's been over a year since we spoke to him the first time. And sadly, everything he talked about in the first show has come to pass. And now we've kicked the can down the road to an even further state of complete tyranny and despotism. It's really sad out there. But please check out all those old editions and episodes of this show. If you look from where we are now and back then, it's quite sad how much has changed in such a short span of time. Also, you got the Patreon and the PayPal links available there at the bottom. I highly encourage you, if you haven't done so, if you got some spare change to throw in a tip jar or perhaps even a larger donation, the PayPal and the Patreon links are there for you. You got the newsletter down there at the bottom so we can stay connected as things continue to deteriorate. Check those out as well. Highly recommend the donations if you haven't already done so. You can just do a one-time thing there at the PayPal link, or you can go to paypal.me/AnomicAge. Check that out directly, because there's a lot of stuff we need to get and changes that need to be made, most notably in the equipment portion of the show, so we can come at you more frequently, more live streams, and just all around better quality. Not to mention just all the website stuff, the continued maintenance, that constant gardening thing, those bills keep on coming. So please, keep on donating if you so desire. That being said, let's get over into the guest portion of the show and talk with Michael. Please stick around for just a mere matter of moments. We will speak to our guest on the other side. It is my pleasure to welcome Mr. Michael Hansen into the Anomic Age for the second time. It's been over a year, but I'm excited he's back. Michael is an independent filmmaker, credentialed teacher, and military veteran of both the Danish and U.S. Army. Michael's projects have been featured in international news media outlets such as One America News, The Blaze, and Rebel Media. He has been nominated for an award by the London-based watchdog group Passion for Freedom. As a filmmaker, Michael has infiltrated militant far-left organizations and exposed how they promote violent extremist agendas in public schools, universities, and government. His fearless search for truth has taken him from no-go zones in Sweden, where the police fear to go, to the infamous migrant camp, The Jungle, in France. He posed as a refugee during the 2015 European migration crisis and as an Antifa activist during the 2016 presidential election. Wow. How's it going, Michael?
It's going all right.
Yeah, we were sort of talking a minute before the show, man. It's gotten so much worse since last time. I think it's been about a year since we spoke.
I know. It's like, it's everything. Everything my movies are about are coming to life.
Yeah, it sure is. I know. I think last week it was Dale Bigtree got taken off of social media, and then numerous other doctors that have come out. I can't recall the lady's name from New York. About almost a month ago now, there's a nurse and veteran that came forth and said, hey, they're killing people in these hospitals. Here's all the proof. She was said to go on Fox. I think she did like a 30-second spot, and that was about it.
Yeah.
So the censorship is real and definitely seemingly exponentially worse.
Well, I will say that, ironically, I've been saying for years, there are two things. 2 years ago, my big thing when I made Killing Free Speech Part 1 was that, and even back when I made Killing Europe, my big thing was that I said, listen, here in America, we still have certain liberties, we still have certain freedoms, but if you're not careful, you know, that's going to come to an end, because I think we can conclude that the Democrats look to Europe for inspiration in more ways than one. It's apparently not only about welfare systems and healthcare systems. They're also looking to Europe when it comes to curtailing free speech and what have you not, and certainly the Second Amendment as well. Both of which we don't have in Europe at this point and haven't had them for a long time. What I'm surprised at is that, and I actually make that point in Killing Free Speech Part 2, is that usually the oppression of free speech usually comes from some government entity, right? It's usually a government that wants to suppress the free speech of people. And that's pretty much how it's been throughout, you know, history of men. You know, the powers, the ruling, the government entities in power, be it a dictator, be it an oligarchy or whatever you want to call them, or autocracy, they're in control and they want to limit the free speech. I think the United States is very unique in that sense, is that now what we're seeing is actually, it's not the government that's pushing it, at least not for now, but it might change after the November election if Trump loses. But for now, it's the private entities that are actually pushing the elimination of free speech. With that, I'm obviously thinking about big tech here. Big tech are leading the charge on eliminating free speech, because let's be real here, the public square, for the most part, has moved from the streets, which are controlled by Antifa, by the way. I think we can conclude that by now.
Oh, yeah.
You know, the new public square where you actually can reach a lot of people is the internet, is social media. And I've argued from day one that I understand that these private entities have a right to decide what the hell goes on their platforms. I get that argument. But I will also make the argument that because they enjoy certain protections that were given by the government, we should view these online forums as a public square where, you know, the First Amendment should be applied. Especially when you look at how important these public forums are now, or the social media forums are now. But it's obvious. I mean, I don't think anybody at this point can argue that big tech are censoring our conservative voices. Who would argue that that's not happening at this point? I know people were saying, oh, that's a conspiracy 2 years ago. But I mean, now there can't be any doubts. I mean, it's right there in our faces. You know what I'm saying? And then you can, of course, roll it back and say, well, why are they doing it? Now, I'll make the argument that all this, if you can think back to, you know, when the whole thing about InfoWars started?
Yeah.
I made that point from the very beginning, and a lot of people made that point. Listen, InfoWars, I get it. You know, sometimes, you know, what's his name? Alex Jones will say some things that not everybody agrees with. He might say some things that are offensive. He might have some strange ideas. I get that part. I mean, listen. But, you know, that doesn't mean that everything that comes out of InfoWars is wrong. And that's my point is that when they went after InfoWars, you know, they went, the reason why they went after InfoWars was something that he had stated years before. I think it was about the whole Sandy Hook thing. All right. Yeah. I don't agree with what his theories on Sandy Hook, but that doesn't mean I believe he should be shut down. But what's interesting is that if I remember correctly, that was their excuse for like, I mean, CNN ultimately were the ones who started this whole witch hunt against InfoWars. And then the Democratic Party got on page here. And if you remember, you had some Ted Deutch and some of these different Democratic congressmen and I think even senators, you know, in these hearings pressuring YouTube and Twitter and all these to basically censor InfoWars. Mm-hmm. But it wasn't based on a lot of the newer content. It was based on older content. And ultimately, I think it was based on Sandy Hook stuff. But what's interesting is that a lot of people then said, it's just InfoWars. I mean, they're kind of kooky anyway, so whatever. But the whole point is that just like with the Antifa on the far left, they'll do one thing they can test and see, well, people will probably agree with this. So let's see if we can push it from there to onwards, right? Mm-hmm. So they started with InfoWars and said, all right, we were successful in shutting InfoWars down. Now let's go after the next one. And that's what's been going on since that. And throughout these next 2 years, you've seen how the span of who is now deemed unworthy of speech in this country, I mean, it just keeps growing and growing and growing. And I will make this comparison to what's been happening in Europe for years when it comes to Antifa, right? Many years ago, back in the early 90s is when in Denmark, that's when you saw the real growth of Antifa. It came out of the squatter movement, right? Mm-hmm. You know, and the whole punk rock scenes and what have you not. And I was a little teenager when all that stuff happened, so. And I think we talked about punk rock before, right?
Oh, yeah, man. When you were talking, that's kind of what I was thinking about, how they went back in time and tried to say, oh, well, look, InfoWars did something we didn't like 3 or 4 years ago. It's kind of like a cop going, hey, like 4 or 5 miles back, I saw you make that U-turn. Now I'm going to get you. I mean, I'm in the same boat as you in many regards. I mean, like, yeah, I did a lot of dumb stuff when I was younger, so. If people start going in that Wayback Machine and going, hey, look, I found a picture of you in 96.
Yeah.
And I'm like, yeah, I did a lot of dumb stuff in 96. So
exactly. I think we all did.
Yeah. I mean, but they've done the same thing with judges and politicians where they're like, oh, totally, we found this image of you in 1983 when you were standing next to this other guy. And I'm like,
exactly. I mean, it only applies to conservatives, of course, but, mm-hmm. but, I wanted to go back to the whole thing about like that they took InfoWars as the first example to see if they could actually get away with it. Yeah. And when they were able to shut InfoWars down, they just started expanding of who is desirable and who's not desirable, right? Mm-hmm. And I want to make a comparison to the European and specifically the Danish Antifa. So back in the 90s, early 90s, the European Antifa started making headways coming out of that squatter movement, right? Now mm-hmm. they really wanted to bring out the revolution. So one of the first things they did was, all right, we're going to be called anti-fascist, right?
Of course.
And we're going to go after neo-Nazis. Now, at that time in Denmark, we had real neo-Nazis that would walk around with swastikas, and they said they were national socialists, whatever, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, they were a very small number, but big enough to where the tabloids could write about it and make it go, ooh, right? But the point was that, so the Antifa, they basically, all right, we're going to go out and protest Nazis. And I think most people can say, Nazi's not my cup of tea, right? Sure. So most people go, all right, yeah, okay, they call themselves anti-fascists. They're against neo-Nazis. That's a good thing. Okay, so they go out, and then the violence came, right? They started attacking neo-Nazis. And people went, yeah, but he's a neo-Nazi. He kind of asked for it themselves. That's kind of like somebody beating up a pedophile, right?
Sure.
If it's a pedophile, probably not a lot of us are going to have much sympathy towards it, right?
Yeah.
And that my point of this is that they start out with something they know that most people are going to go, I don't care. He's a neo-Nazi. Who cares about him, right? And then they get away with it, right? And they kind of get it normalized that they're the good guys and the neo-Nazis are the bad guys. They beat up neo-Nazis. It's their own fault. And people go, we don't care. They're neo-Nazis. All right. So they establish that. Then they take on the next point, right? All right. Let's push it on to now. Okay, far right people, whatever that means, right? Mm-hmm. We'll start going after far right. They're not neo-Nazis, but they're still kind of fascist. They just
they're still bad.
They're still bad. And then they go after them. And they went, all right, we got away with that too. Then the next step is, all right, we're going to start going after conservatives. And you see how the span of who becomes justifiable of attacking becomes broader and broader and broader until it basically means everybody who doesn't support far left. Now, why did I talk about how that development happened in Denmark? Because when you look at how big tech, the Democrats, media, anybody, they basically took InfoWars and they did the exact same thing that Antifa did in Denmark. They started with the one thing that most people would probably go, InfoWars kind of kooky. And they just one step. And before you knew it, that's where we are today. At this point, it seems like on the internet, they're pretty much banning anybody who has any kinds of ideas that goes against. Like now you can't, I mean, let's be real here. Like pretty much any conservative is being banned at this point.
I mean, Nadler came out and said there was no violence in the cities, though. He just gaslighted everybody. He's like, oh, there's no real violence. That's just something they say on the DC news. Forget about it. Exactly.
But what I find interesting is that, you know, that pretty much anybody at this point can get banned. I mean, anybody who's conservative, at least. And not only that, now with this whole COVID thing, I find it interesting that everybody's saying nobody really knows what's going on with COVID because it's a new thing, right? So nobody really knows. So if nobody really knows, who's to say what's fake news about COVID, right? It's kind of interesting, right? Oh, we don't know really what this is, but we're still going to be the judge of what's fake news. And then this whole thing about the high, what's that called? I keep messing up the hydroxychloroquine.
Yeah.
Yeah, there you go. So, I mean, there are some in Europe, they use it big time and there are studies that says it helps, but somebody decided that, well, that's fake news, right? So let's shut that down. And anybody who talks about it, let's shut them down. I mean, I think even Breitbart got their account frozen on Twitter or something like that for 48 hours just for airing that press conference.
Yeah, and I mean, they're doing the 1984 thing. It's so silly that you keep, or I keep having to bring this up, but it's like, dude, they're doing the memory of truth. I mean, excuse me, not the memory of truth. I'm thinking memory hole, but the, you know what I mean? Winston. And the
Ministry of Truth.
Ministry of Truth. Thank you. But they're doing that because nobody knows all this information. So they're making sure nobody knows by weeding out the nurse in New York, by weeding out your information, by weeding out the Breitbart information, the Dale Bigtree information, the Alex Jones information, anybody except the approved by the state sanitized for your protection narrative is just whisked away as just like, oh, it's not happening. It's not real. Nadler just gaslighting everybody. There's no violence. That chop thing, they're just a bunch of guys holding hands with signs and loving
exactly,
people.
Right?
Big kisses and hugs.
Exactly. I mean, it's very, Stalin did a pretty good job at it too, right? When they erased any pictures with Trotsky or anybody, you know, whenever somebody deemed undesirable, that's what Winston in 1984's job was, to write people out of history, right? Mm-hmm. But what I find interesting is that how quickly this has escalated. Like from 6 months ago, I mean, don't get me wrong, this censorship has been going on for a while now, but it seems like these past few months, man, it's just gone from 2 to 12 within like a few months, where it's like, now it's just censorship going crazy. And this whole woke thing about, like, did you see that they just kicked out Kindergarten Cop from some street? I mean, it's just like,
I didn't see that one yet.
It's just nothing is sacred anymore. It's just anything. They will shut down anything because, I mean, let's face it, from their perspective, they're like, all right, well, we got away with this. Now we're going to do this. And we're basically going to cancel out everything except for us. That's what they're doing. Even freaking Kindergarten Cop, right?
Yeah. And, I mean, it's so nuts. Cause I mean, to go back to what you were saying a few moments ago, you know, they're doing that whole propaganda divide and conquer thing, just like all those great, not great, all those communist leaders in the past. They're using that propaganda, like all those World War I and World War II flyers where it shows the evil Hun and Hitler would show the caricature of the Jew invading and all this stuff. And that's what Antifa was doing. They're saying, look, those people are Nazi. We're going to get them. They're bad. And then, you know, just like the Hitlerian motto, it's like, oh, it's not just the gays and the gypsies. It's now it's the Jews, and now we got to take out Poland, and now we got to take out England. They just keep expanding that bubble and moving that Overton window of what the new boogeyman is. It's not just these people, it's those people and those people. And pretty soon, you look around, everybody's gone except for the chosen protected class.
Exactly. I mean, that's ultimately what it's about, right? But what I find interesting is that, I mean, going back to George Orwell, because, you know, I've always been very fond of George Orwell. And as time goes by, I see his books come to life, right? Which is scary, and who would have ever thought it? But, you know, there's one of my favorite quotes by George Orwell is that in times of universal deceit, telling the truth becomes an act of revolution, right?
Mm-hmm.
And the thing is that, and again, this is a point I really beat on in part two, and I have Brad Skates in part two, by the way.
Oh, awesome. He was a great guest. I'm glad you guys got to hook up together. That's
great. So the thing is that what's interesting about it is that Killing Free Speech part one and part two are about censorship, right?
Mm-hmm.
Warning against censorship, and in the movie I make a lot of comparison to Europe, like I've just done here, right? I make a lot of these points saying, listen, this is what's going on in Europe, this is what happened in Europe, this can happen here if you're not careful, blah blah blah, right? So what's interesting is that since the movies came out, you know, I put them out on Amazon Prime, and then what does Amazon do? They cancel them. They ban them. And the reason I got was because of offensive material. Now, you got to ask yourself, a movie about free speech, all right, is offensive. So what they're saying is that talking about free speech has now become offensive. So we're literally in a time now where at least the Silicon Valley and the Democratic Party at the same time, you know, free thought and free speech are now deemed offensive because if you say something about it that they don't like, or if you even mention that there's censorship, that's apparently offensive. It's like Breitbart and Gateway Pundit, and they did some articles on it, and it's true. Like Amazon, they proved the point of the movies. And that's what's scary is that their reasoning being offensive material. It's like they might as well just written me a letter saying, yeah, you committed thought crime, right?
Yeah. The whole cancel culture thing now I find just hysterical. Like, what the bleep does that mean? Like, you don't like me, so now you're deeming me unworthy and you're canceling my existence is exactly what the heck they're doing.
Exactly. I mean, I just feel like everything is just on steroids now. I mean, you know, they tear down all the statues. And now I heard some guy in Chicago, some representative, or I don't know, I'm not too sure, he said something about that. They need to cancel history lessons until it's been rewritten to a more sensitive.
Oh, that sounds great. Yeah, just wipe it out.
You know what I'm referring to? But they're like, he said it's too white or something. I'm like, all right, let's just go freaking full Mao here, right?
Let's just take it out.
Let's just tear down all that. I mean, that's what they did, right? In the Cultural Revolution, tear everything down and rewrite history till it fits, you know, whatever they want, right?
I mean, start rounding up all the glasses and killing the people with glasses, too.
Exactly. I mean, it's just, I must admit, these past few months, I'm just like, every day I just become more amazed at how dysfunctional this is getting. It's getting out of hand. But ultimately, you know, referring to what I think is really scary about this is that at the end of the day, behind the scenes and stuff like that, you know, there's a Democratic Party egging this on. And ultimately, you know, in the beginning, actually instigated it because they were the ones actually pushing to get InfoWars banned in the first place, taking it back to that. So you really got to in the beginning, I said what's interesting is that here it's not the government, but the private sector pushing it. But what I'm getting at is that by the actions of the Democratic Party for these past couple of years, you know, what's going to happen if – I don't think it's going to happen. I'm still a firm believer that Trump's going to win by a landslide unless they really do some magical – I don't know what. I mean, this whole voting in mail and all this stuff. Out in New Jersey, who won the primary yet? Because freaking 30, 40,000 ballots still haven't been accounted for. Put that to the national level, see what happens, right? But the point is that what's going to happen if, let's just say if Biden won, man, what the heck is going to happen to our protections? I mean, they've already proven and shown that they're advocating censorship, right, of conservatives. What's going to happen? What's going to happen if Biden became, I mean, because we know it's not going to be Biden who's going to be president. I mean, the dude's halfway senile by now. It's going to be whatever. It's pretty clear who's now in control of the Democratic Party. It's no longer your traditional establishment Democrats who are pretty much like Republicans and vice versa. I mean, I hated them too.
Oh, yeah.
These new handlers of the Democratic Party, it seems like the far left has taken over the Democratic Party, at least for the time being, right? And you know what's going to happen to free speech if they win in November? That's what I'm really afraid of. What's going to happen? But not only what's going to happen to free speech, they've also shown that they're willing to take real drastic action to also end the Second Amendment. And to me, free speech and the First and Second Amendment go hand in hand. You can't have the one without the other. I mean,
no.
And that's another one. And then you look at, I mean, they're doing two things here. At one hand, they want to defund the police. They're egging on the chaos. At the other hand, if you stand up to the mob, if you defend yourself, if you use your speech or your right to defend yourself, they'll throw the hammer at you, right? They want you to like become helpless at the mercy and be quiet at these mobs, right?
Absolutely. You nailed it. I think that's exactly what they want. I was in Missouri where there was a man and his wife out there gun because the Antifa goons showed up through the private gate and they were out in his front yard. I was thinking, yeah, that'd be me. I'd do that. Like, what's the alternative? Letting your house get firebombed? I mean, come on.
I mean, honestly, I mean, I might have taken a step further. If I had 100 of those people coming towards me, man,
yeah,
I don't know if I would have just been waving that gun because I know I would use them.
Let me say that again. I think it was yesterday or perhaps the day before. It was Steven Crowder from Louder with Crowder was out in Texas. And he just did the most, you know, innocuous. He had his table set up and he was trying to convince me of, I can't remember the prompt or what have you. But, and then within minutes, the Antifa goons showed up and did the cancel culture on him. Even though they had the crazy boombox and all this nonsense with a PA. So the man couldn't even speak. So did he have the ability to articulate words? Yeah. Could anybody hear him or understand him? No. So, I mean, they ride that fine line and follow all those Sal Alinsky tactics and rules for radicals and all that mess.
Yeah. No, yeah, of course. I mean, I mean, you see that play out every time, right? Isolate, demonize, and then what's the last one? Salinsky, it was isolate, demonize. I can't remember what the third one was, but the thing is that, I mean, but what's going to happen? I mean, it's all playing out in front of us. And I think that if you look at what's going on in these Democratic controlled cities, I mean, that's going to happen to the country if they win in November. I feel as if this election is going to be the most important election in the 20th century. I mean, I really do, because you've never had such a contrasting set of opinions before. I don't know. I don't even think like the 60s was as polarized as this. I really don't. I mean, I know that things got rough in the 60s, but I don't think in the 60s anybody were arguing that you shouldn't have free speech. I don't think anybody in the 60s were arguing for defunding of police. I don't think anybody in the 60s were arguing about like even private ownership or the right to have the Second Amendment. I don't think any of those were in play in the 60s. It was more or less, you know, about, you know, women's rights and end segregation. Well, that came in the 50s, but you get what I'm saying, right? I mean, and then you had your cultural revolution with the hippies wanting to run around with the flowers in the hair, and then anti-war. I mean, if anything, in the 60s, you know, it's Black Panthers and anti-war. That were the most, you know, pressing, polarizing points, I think, back in the 60s, if my history is cool.
Yeah, but, that's spot on.
But I will say that, you know, society is even more pulled apart today than it was in the 60s. I mean, that's just how I perceive it. And I think that the stakes have not been higher in U.S. history as they are now, with maybe the exception with the election before the Civil War. Mm-hmm. Maybe, you know, those two, I don't know, I'm not going to be the judge of that, but I think those two elections are probably the most crucial ones in U.S. history where the United States had to choose a direction, right? And I think that this thing in November, man, if Americans choose Biden and it turns out to be correct that Biden is not going to be your moderate, whatever that he's known to be, whatever that is, establishment, whatever, you'll get business as usual kind of a thing. And they'll put up the illusion that they're Democrats and they're Republicans. I don't think that's going to happen. I really have you read Biden's that plan that was hammered out with Bernie Sanders and the rest of the squad and all these different.
Where it's like the Green Party AOC stuff coupled with his own nonsense, like, pretty much.
One of the big, you know, they're basically talking about like open borders, you know.
Yeah, I saw that today where he's not going to put one more brick on the southern border wall. It's just going to be
exactly
what it was before, I guess, which is kind of ironic. We haven't heard about the border in 6 months because everybody's had their slave mask on.
Exactly, but what's interesting is, like, in that program, his vision for America is also one of the big things that hasn't been talked about that much. What's it called? Where was I? Oh yeah. So in Biden's plan, they also talk about this thing about that they want to be able to offer Section 8 in all neighborhoods and all towns, right?
Wow.
So basically, and it's one of those things where it's like, if you basically force upon it that there has to be Section 8 available every place, you're basically going to, like, destroy the suburbs.
You can say that again, yeah.
I mean, come on, let's be real here, right?
I mean, I can say that firsthand. Where we were living a while back, a few years ago, that's exactly what happened. It was a relatively nice condo area. And sure, it's a university town, so you had some college kids there.
Yeah.
Not too bad, but in the short span of time that I was there, you know, we saw it just go down quick, and we went to some of the HOA meetings and such, and they were finally like, oh yeah, well, it's because somebody is buying up all the units and putting Section 8 in there.
Yeah.
So yeah, I mean, of course some guy got shot like two doors down. Of course they had an ATF raid to the building across the street. I got home one day and it was like explosions and fire and all kinds of stuff. And I was like, we got to move, because I'm not having to kid around this stuff.
Exactly.
But yeah, I mean, to your point, that's exactly what Section 8 is going to do. If you put that in every neighborhood everywhere, it's going to bring it all down.
Exactly. But bringing it back to Biden, so I think that, like, if you really look at the bigger scope of things, like, there are so many things at stake. There's your free speech. There's your Second Amendment. There's your right to be a free citizen at this point. I don't think it's is grandeur or an exaggeration to say that it's really the pillars of what makes America America are at stake right now. I mean, I think we can say that without, like, sounding like too hysterical or anything like that. I mean, that's just my take on it, is that, you know, it's I know I keep saying it, but this election scares me. It really does.
Yeah, I mean, those are the big three. You got to have freedom of speech, you got to have freedom of religion, and you got to have freedom to bear arms. And kind of like you said, you can't have the other two if you don't have the right to bear arms.
Exactly. And I mean, I think that if you make the wrong choice in November, United States is going to turn into Europe in so many ways, and it's not going to be good. And I'll bring it back to this whole idea that you know, you're seeing in some of these liberal cities, New York, I mean, within the span of a few months, right? As soon as they started talking about defunding police, even talking about it, crime started going up. Mm-hmm. And then de Blasio, in all his wisdom, cancels that New York crime unit. And what happens? Shootings go up like 200% in 1 month, right? And then, you know, you add that to that bright idea he had about the bail reform, where it's like, if you commit a crime in New York, you're out again, because you don't have to post bail, because that's discriminatory.
Right? Oh, of course, yeah.
Of course. So, I mean, he's creating this atmosphere where criminals can do whatever they want. So basically, I mean, you're creating this society where the criminals can do whatever they want without any real consequences. If you want to see a society where that's happening, just go to Northern Europe, specifically Scandinavia. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you want to talk about, I mean, bringing it back to like when we had that wave of migrants coming in 2015, I mean, crime rates have skyrocketed. Especially the rape statistics have just gone, it's out of control, all right? Because it's no secret that people from the Middle East, men from the Middle East, don't quite view women in the same fashion as some of us do, right?
Say that again. And,
yeah. So, and nothing happens to them, really. Nothing compared to what would happen to them anywhere else, all right? So they're basically in a candy shop, and they're just picking their select items, right? And they go with it, right? I mean, in Germany, there was a guy who raped a 14-year-old girl in June. He was let out, and he goes on to rape a 12-year-old girl, right? I mean, I just read the article from Germany like a week ago. I mean, this is the society that the Democrats are aiming to emulate, because at the end of the day, and this is where I think this whole socialist idea comes in, is that they want to create a society where, you know, it's not based on the individual, it's based on the masses, right?
Yeah, the collective.
Collective, exactly. And in their eyes, and this is why crime, the legal system in Scandinavia is a joke, because the thinking in Scandinavia is that if somebody commits a crime, it's not on the individual, it's because the collective failed that individual. The system failed the individual. So he shouldn't really be punished per se, he should be helped to go in the right direction. So that's why you see, I mean, in Denmark, I mean, for murder, the most you really get is 12 years. And a rapist, he'll be out in a year or whatever, right? And during this whole time, they get weekend passes. They can leave prisons during weekends and stuff like that.
Get out of here.
Yeah, no, I'm not kidding you. I know it sounds ridiculous, but that's actually the reality. And the whole idea is that so many resources are put into the perpetrator, and the victims are pretty much just whatever. They're on their own, because the real victim here is the perpetrator, because the system failed him. All right, that's the mentality of the Democrats.
Yeah, I mean, I hate to keep coming back to these obvious points that I'm sure you know all too well. It's the stupid education system again, victimhood, pushing the. It's all racism. It's all sexism. It's all xenophobia. It's all somebody else's problem. It's this institutional racism, institutional sexism. That's why
nobody ever defines exactly what is institutional racism. I've yet to have anybody tell me specifically institutional racism is that, and that, and here are the numbers. Nobody's done that right now. I'm still waiting for that. It's this, institutional racism, but nobody actually tells me what it is and shows me some numbers. All right, so they say the cops are after the African Americans. Well, how about you show me some numbers? Because the number says complete opposite. But going into the educational system, I mean, you know, I really think the left, they're in it for the long run, right? Mm-hmm. So after the 60s, they basically, in effect, took over the educational institutions. When I got into teaching about 12 years ago, roughly, I mean, that was out in California. So needless to say, being a conservative, you probably didn't want to say that out loud, too loud, right?
Sure.
But for the most part back then, still, it was kind of like, yeah, most people were liberal and so forth. It was in between the lines, but it wasn't in your face, all right? And if somebody found out that I was a conservative, I wasn't just automatically going to get fired, at least back then. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you noticed what's going on lately. I mean, there's this one teacher who got fired because on his own social media wrote, "Trump is my president." I mean, it's like, and I've seen it like, since the election of Trump, the left has just lost their mind. And what I've seen in schools is like it went from being like kind of like there in between the lines to now it's like in your face. You know what I'm saying?
Oh yeah, it's so overt now. They don't even pull punches or try to pretend there's a covert systematic. I mean,
it is systematic, and I've got a lot of proof. And one of these days, I got to put together a video because I've done a lot of recording. what's it called? It's in your face propaganda. And
yes.
The thing is that if you as a teacher are against it, you will get fired at this point. I mean, with this guy getting fired for posting Trump as my president, that just says it all at this point.
That yeah, there's a reason I use a pen name on this show.
Well, yeah, exactly. But the point is that, I mean, yeah, I mean, as a teacher, I mean, if you get found out that you're like supporting Trump and stuff, forget about it. Your career is over at this point, at least in these freaking wingnut states. I mean,
yeah, it's like Invasion of the Body Snatchers. They shriek and point at you, and you may as well just start running.
Exactly. I mean, I'll never forget. I have a principal who, you know, during, I think it was beginning of African American History Month. This was before the Joyce Floyd riots, and what have you not. Keep that in mind. Sure. Him and the vice principal. And mind you, he's white. Not that that matters too much, but still. He shows up in a Black Lives Matter t-shirt, right? And I kind of knew that was going to happen because I saw a lot of Black Lives Matter stuff on the walls. But I wondered, I'm like, should I bring an All Lives Matter t-shirt or not? And I was kind of like, nah, let me not push it, right? But he shows up with the Black Lives Matter. But I know for a fact, had I put on that White Lives Matter t-shirt, I would have been fired. No question about it. Now, What's interesting too is that with the agenda, right? This school, they and a lot of schools are all they use this term international citizen, right? Mm-hmm. You know, and why that's important is an international citizen. We're part of a world community, blah blah blah. Yeah, we are, but we're still a country. We still got borders, at least for now. But what's interesting is that when the board was going to be doing a walk through the school, the principal came up to me and he said, hey, listen, you know, the American flag and stuff like that, I need for you to take that down and put some other stuff on there. I'm like, why? Well, you know, we just need, and I'm like, and I looked at him like, okay. I never took him down. I just moved him a little bit, but, and I made sure that there was a big old American flag. But I can tell you that in that school, the only place you found an American flag was in my classroom. There was nothing else. And when I remember when I started working there, I asked the principal, I'm like, hey, how come you don't do Pledge of Allegiance in the morning? What's going on here? He's like, oh, we don't do that stuff around here. I'm like, okay. And then I started seeing the whole thing about international citizen. So you see, that's part of the agenda. You get what I'm saying? What's going on in this inner New York City school is that they're really telling the kids, you're not American. You're part of a global community, right? And you're not going to pledge of allegiance because we don't believe in that. We don't believe in the borders. Everybody should be able to come because we're all global citizens at the end of the day. And then, of course, I mean, you could not walk around anywhere in that school without seeing student work. Here's the effect of it. Student work that didn't say that Trump was racist or the White House was based on racism. I mean, it was just insane. I took a couple of pictures. And it's just, I mean, the anti-American sentiment is just, it's out of control in these schools. Like inner city New York, out of control American. What's interesting is that a lot of the students that I've dealt with in inner city New York, most of their parents were, you know, were immigrants, newly arrived immigrants, right? Mm-hmm. Some of them legal, some of them, big chunk of them illegal, right? And what's interesting is that these students and their parents, they all hate America. And I was like, wow. I mean, I was like, and I asked them, like, so are you proud to be American? They're like, no, this place sucks, blah, 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 blah. Racist.
How are you here? Please leave.
Exactly. Well, I can't say that as a teacher.
Oh, of course. I know. I'm in the same boat.
Fired. But my point is that I asked them, I'm like, so think about this. And this is why these schools and these leftists want to shut down anybody who doesn't follow their example, because all it takes is if you ask these students a couple of questions, get them thinking for a little bit, they kind of go, oh, I'll give an example. I'm kind of like, all right, because we started, whenever the students saw a picture of Trump, they would all start yelling, ah! I mean, it was like clockwork, right?
Yeah, like the psychology studies with the Pavlov's dog. They just see they start shrieking. They don't even have to have any context. It's just large man bad. That's it.
Okay, so I asked them. I'm like, one day I said, then I asked them, these were eighth graders. I asked them, hey, so how come you react like that when you see a picture of Trump? Oh, he's racist. He's against immigrants. You know, all the talking points that I hear from the parents. And the parents probably got from some whatever, AOC, whatever. Mm-hmm. I mean, where it is, just to put it into perspective, where I teach is actually in AOC's district. So that tells you something about it. And any leftists out there, I'm sure you're going to try and go find me and get me fired. But whatever. I don't care at this point. I really don't. But the point is that, so I asked these kids, all right, so why do you react like that when you see Donald Trump? Ah, he's racist, blah, 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 blah. He's against immigrants. I'm like, okay. He said they're all rapists and violent criminals. I said, ah, that's not exactly what he said. So I said, here's the quote. Mm-hmm. And it was in context. And they were kind of, oh, so he didn't say, oh, hey, he just said some. I'm like, yeah. So I said, you know, it always helps that you actually look at the fuller picture because people like to give you little pieces and leave out the other pieces, right? So that was a little lesson in critical thinking for the kids. And the last time I knew, American education was about critical thinking. That's one of the foundations. It's not anymore.
Supposedly.
Obviously. Supposedly. I mean, but the point is, so I asked them, okay, so what is it with the whole immigration part? Well, he doesn't like immigrants. And I said, well, let's define what's an immigrant and what's an illegal alien. And we went into the civics book and said, all right, this is what your civics book tells you. There are aliens and illegal aliens. That's the legal term for these people. They're immigrants, illegal immigrants. And they said, well, you know, they should let everybody in. And I said, okay, there are 95 million refugees alone in this world, let alone other people. Should we just let them all in? Yeah, it'd be too crowded, blah, blah, blah. I said, okay, so do you want to shut it completely off? No, that's not fair. I'm like, okay, so we want to kind of limit it. And we want to make sure not everybody comes in, right? And they're like, yeah. So I said, all right, so this border wall, they're like, ah, it's racist, racist, racist. And I said, okay, let's think about it for a sec. I said, this school, who's in front of the school? Well, we got security guards. Are the doors locked? Yeah, they're locked. How do you get in? Well, you got to bust yourself in. You got to sign it. I said, why do we have that? They're like, well, it's for security and stuff like that. I said, well, don't you think it's more fair to just have an open school and just have it open, send the security guards home and let people come in if they want to come in? They're like, no, that's dangerous, blah, 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 blah. That makes no sense. And I said, all right, that's exactly why we have borders. We need to control who comes in. We need to check they're okay or not. And we can't have an open border. We need to have control points. And we need to then close off the other points. So we control where people come in and who comes in. And then all of a sudden, they're kind of like, ah, that makes sense. Now, that aha moment is what these leftists don't want.
Yes.
Now, mind you,
right.
I did not, you know, I never do this in my classroom. I never say I'm a Trump supporter. I mean, the kids always go, you're Trump supporter. And I go, why? Well, because you're white. And I'm like, okay.
I know plenty That's of it, of course.
Both of Trump, but let's just leave that alone. I don't talk about my own opinions. What I did was I just laid some facts in front of the students and let them make up their own mind, right? And that's what they don't want in education anymore. They don't even want the facts. And that goes back to the whole what we started to talk about with the censorship. Even facts are considered bad nowadays, right? Mm-hmm. And I think if you take that little classroom experience, that's what's going on in the whole country, at least from the leftist perspective. They don't want that one guy to go, wait a minute, that house is on fire. If we take a bucket of water and pour on the fire, it'll turn off. We can extinguish that fire. They're going to go, no, that's not true. Water doesn't work.
Exactly. Water doesn't work.
Exactly, right? That's what's going on in this entire country. They don't want certain facts because these certain facts will actually, if you lay in front of people, they kind of go, oh, wait a minute. Yeah, maybe there is an institutionalized racism. Wait a minute. You're telling me only two unarmed African-Americans were shot last year? Well, it was technically, I think it was 9 or 12, but I think all of them, with the exception of two, they were actually assaulting the police officer. Mm-hmm. So like Eric Garner kind of situation, you only had two last year, and then you had about 9 whites or something that in the same circumstances. So you're kind of going, wait a minute. Looking at these numbers, yeah, it doesn't look like that the cops are actually targeting African Americans. No, we can't have that fact, right? Because that's going to make people think.
And yeah, I mean, they want to control the narrative and they want to control the context. That's the whole deal. There used to be an image that was going around on social media, and it showed you the two different contexts of the image. And it was it was cropped all tight, and it showed a little kid, you know, like he was shrieking with a boot coming down on his face. And then they panned out and showed the full context. And it was a little boy playing, and he had a boot on his hand, and he was pretending it was a monster or something. Yeah. And it was just a kid playing. But again, if you control that context and crop it tight versus that wide shot, you know, one shot, oh, it's a cute little kid playing. Tight shot, oh, it's a kid getting stomped in the face by a boot forever, you know, a la 1984. But that's exactly what they want. I mean, the media wants, they want that tight crop. They don't want to see the context of the full Trump quote.
Exactly. Like with the kiss, I'm like, here's the full quote. And they kind of go, oh. And that's what I find scary is that I'm okay with people having different opinions. Listen, you don't have to like Trump. I mean, on a personal level, do I think he seems like a nice guy? Probably not. He's an asshole New Yorker. Let's be real, right?
Yeah, I mean, I'll say the same thing. I probably wouldn't want to go hang out with him, but.
No, but the thing is that, listen, I didn't vote for him for his personality. I voted for him because he has ideas that I agree with. And, you know, these past almost four years, he's delivered on a lot of things, and he's been a benefit to this country. The economy was up until our little mysterious disease came around, of course, and then we had our riots. Wow, that was a coincidence. But the point is that but if you're gonna not like him, I can totally respect that. Just tell me why and give me like sound reasons. And if you give me the data that says I don't like him because of this and this and this, I'll say that's fair enough. That's a sound argument. I may not agree with it, but hey, listen, that's fair enough. At least you made a decision on your opinions based on like some kind of data. But that's not what's happening, right? It's like, I don't like this because I don't have to give you a reason, right? I'm just going to scream at you.
Yeah.
And that's what's going on. And that's it. And when all is said and done, it doesn't matter if it's mainstream media, the Democrats, anybody, Tech Valley, anybody, they're all using the same argument. I don't like what you're saying. I'm going to scream at you, and I'm not going to listen to you. That's what's going on. That's what Antifa does. That's what any authoritarian regime does. That's what anybody does, right? And you're a bad guy, by the way, right? That, I mean, when you really simplify it, that's what's going on in this country right now. I don't have to listen to you. I don't care what you say. You're a bad guy. I'm just going to stand there and scream at you, and you are just going to stand there and be quiet because you're a bad guy. That's what this all comes down to.
And, I think it'd be funny to have an experiment because everybody's been so conditioned in the culture just that they see the image and start shrieking and get all emotional. And I think it'd be funny to show a Mao shirt or show a Che Guevara shirt or something and see what the initiated response is, because I guarantee just about the Trump shirt would be the most scary and everybody would shriek and all this mess.
Well, of course. I mean, I can say that one school I was at, literally when I walked in for my first day of professional development, there was a gigantic Che Guevara quote on the PowerPoint slide. And I'm like, what the hell? And then, you know, some of the staff were walking around with Che Guevara on their back with a quote about education. I'm like, I'm a history teacher. I'm pretty sure that dude was a bad guy, but hey, what do I know?
Yeah, that was one of the few bright spots I had in the last few years. I taught a class in person, and I was getting ready to leave, and I always end up talking to students for forever, seemingly after class. But there was a Hispanic man. Well, he was a 20-year-old kid, but whatever. Yeah. He came up, and he sort of brought up the Che thing, because he was like, yeah, my grandmother fled Cuba under Castro and Che, and she's made a huge point to me. Don't ever wear that stinking shirt. You know, like, she knew firsthand what he and the communist system did in that country. So she was at least very adamant to her grandson. And I think he even mentioned she was a Trump supporter, which is super scary. But it gave me a little hope. I was like, well, at least there's some people getting this information, even though he's probably not a Trump supporter. At least he's
Cuban, right? I mean, see, the Cubans understand what they fled. And for the most part, Cubans don't support that because they fled. They came to America to get away from that. Yeah. And they're not like other people coming to America who wanna, or even like people coming to Europe. They're leaving a place because it sucks. Then they go to a new place, and then they start voting for the same policies and advocating the same policies that made their place suck in the first place. that it's kind of like, and you see when people come from the Middle East, they want Middle Eastern culture to basically take over Europe. And it's like, wait a minute, you left that place supposedly because it sucks. So why would you want the same thing over there? Makes no sense, right? Mm-hmm. But that brings me to also something that irks me. I just don't understand. Like Democrats who are fleeing New York, fleeing California, all of these places. I mean, everybody's talking about, oh, Texas might get flipped one of these days because all the liberals are moving there to Austin and stuff like that. And I'm like, if you're a liberal leaving California because California sucks, they're, you know, you have no opportunity because let's get frank. They ran California to the ground. Why the hell would you then move to Texas and then vote for the same policies that screwed up California in the first place? That makes no sense. I mean, it's just stupidity. What are you going to do then when Texas is messed up? You're going to go to the next state? It's like freaking, it's almost like freaking locust or something.
It's that cognitive dissonance thing. Communists didn't work here, but it's going to work in the next state, I tell you.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, it didn't work there. Oh, we'll try it again over there. And 120 million people killed later. Ah, oh, let's try it again here in America now. But we won't call it communism. We'll call it democratic socialism.
Yeah. And it's so wild to me. I was thinking about this before our interview, just sort of about the music stuff and everything from when I was younger and a kid and everything. And it's like the communists have fully uncloaked, and the youth culture that surrounds that has seemingly just flipped. Because like when I was younger, probably like yourself, you know, they had the music censorship was this big thing. They had the PMRC. They're going to censor all these records. And I remember a Dead Milkmen song. They said something like, here's a dime, run out and call the PMRC. Something about, you know, as a tip of the hat to censoring all the music. And they were doing the same thing then. It was like, oh, Two Live Crew, they have to be censored, and Judas Priest or whatever. And eventually they got the stickers on all the music. And so you would think, you know, like all the youth at that point were going, hey, we don't want the censorship. We want to have the ability to listen to what we want.
Yeah.
And you juxtapose that to now, about 30 years later, sadly, everybody's going, yeah, we want censorship. They shouldn't be able to say hydroxychloroquine might help you. We need to take Alex Jones off. He said something we didn't agree with. And I'm just going, man, are you guys, here's the mirror. Are you seeing how nuts this is?
I say that all the time. I'm like, we're in a weird place in history where people that like for the most part, millennials, I would say. And you know, and a lot of those kids have gone through my classrooms, right? I'm like looking at these kids. I'm like, wow, we're looking at a generation that's, they're the first ones to actually advocate for less freedom.
Yeah, they're cutting the nose off to spite their face.
Exactly. It's like all the people in Germany who voted for the Nazi party, right? Because they got a lot of votes. It's like people are voting. They want less freedom, advocating less freedom. I've never heard of teenagers doing that before. Teenagers always wanted more freedom, you know, until, you know, when teenagers came around in the 1950s, right? I mean,
that's really what we got.
But before then, there wasn't a teenager because they were out working already. Maybe the flappers, but that was only for rich people, right? Flappers.
Yeah, they were storming the beaches of Normandy before that. And then in the 50s, exactly. They're like, oh, man.
Teenagers were fighting Nazis before that, right? But it is interesting that they want less freedom. And I look at it, I'm kind of like, damn. Because, yeah, back in the mid-90s when I was all about punk rock, it was about going against the grain and, you know, like, you know, anything goes. Do it yourself and anything goes, right? That was the whole mantra of it all. Sure, even back then, you know, the leftists were trying to like hijack the whole thing and make it about, you know, socialism, anarchy, whatever. Oh, yeah. But I'm like, listen, man, I'm like, the point is that, yes, how things have changed, right? But I guess it's one of those, like, the next generation wants to do the opposite of the previous generation. So if we were advocating, like, go against the grain and, like, follow your own path, do it yourself, and say, well, do whatever you want. Within limits, right?
Oh, yeah, sure.
The point is that they're doing the opposite. They were like, everybody follow the same thing. Let's just be freaking a collective and advocate this and that. And it's just, they're not very punk rock. I can say that. That's for sure.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, I've kind of fallen out of any sort of music like that or even keeping up with it. But the off chances that I do, it's always so sad because I'll see these bands that I used to really, I won't say admire, but at least I like their music. And now they're coming out. I guess it's just to still sell records or whatever. I don't know. They're just coming out with the same sort of stuff you might hear from AOC or the like.
And I know. I mean, I feel like if to talk about history, music, because we always end up doing that towards the end of it, right? I mean, I don't know if you saw, like, I think it really started happening under Bush, right? When Bush became president, it became trendy to be anti-Bush, of course. And Fact Records, you know, NoFX, Fact Mike, all those people, they started the whole rock against Bush and that whole thing, right? So now it became fashionable. And I found out that if there's anybody who's like are not able to think by themselves, I guess it became the punk rock scene, because damn, everybody jumped on the bandwagon all of a sudden. And then all of a sudden, like, if you didn't this, same thing in Denmark. Like, I remember, like, it came like a little bit later, where like, when if you had a concert and certain organ, they were like, no sexism, no racism, no this, no that, like a whole list of laundry list of things. And it just got longer and longer and longer, right? And to the point where it's like, I remember I would wear like a McDonald's belt buckle just as a joke, and people would think I was the Antichrist, right? But the thing is that, and I remember, have you ever heard of a band called Guttermouth?
Yeah, of course.
So during I think Lollapalooza or some of the other ones, like, everybody had like Rock Against Bush kind of crap. So they said they, in their stand, they had pro Bush stuff. Not that they supported it, they just wanted to be punk rock and piss people off.
Yeah, of course.
And lo and behold, they were booted off the tour, right? I mean, and I'm like,
no concept of satire at all.
Exactly, right? And I look at it, and I'm like, you know, I always wanted to do this. I don't know if we talked about this. I think we did, actually. You know,
no, really? Bad, I don't know.
Bad Religion with their...
Oh, yes. Yeah, of course. Yeah.
Yeah, I always want... I've been wanting to do this for the longest of time. Do a Bad Religion t-shirt, right? But instead of a cross, put an Islamic symbol in there.
Oh,
and,
man.
And like, literally walk through a college with the original Bad Religion t-shirt for a day and record if there's any reactions. There are obviously not going to be none. But... Yeah. Then do the same thing the next day where you're walking around Bad Religion and then a thing over a Muslim symbol and see what happens, right?
You'd probably be arrested and taken off campus.
Well, yeah, you probably will be arrested, right? send off to the indoctrination camp or something. But that's my point is that it's just, I don't know, it's just, it saddens me too. But I mean, to me, like, a lot of these music scenes, they're dead anyways. It's just, when you let politics become the most important thing, you might as well just stop playing music, right? I mean, freaking join your radical revolutionary political party or whatever. Like, I mean, honestly, at this point, I can't, you know, Jello Biafra from Dead Kennedys, I can't stand listening to that dude.
I just
want to jump on stage and beat the snot out of him. You know,
yeah.
It's like he's preaching, man. I'm like, dude, shut the hell up and play your music. That's why I'm here.
That's what's so sad, because I used to love the Dead Kennedys, but when I listen to him now in these interviews and these diatribes, I'm just like, man.
I know. It's like, I mean, he's always been political, don't get me wrong. And it was all right. But you know what? At least back then, like Holiday in Cambodia, Nazi punk fuck off and stuff like that.
Yeah.
You read the lyrics and you see what it's about. You're kind of like, yeah, you got a little nice, you know, at least back then it was kind of like, you know, there was still some kind of sense to it, right?
Yeah, at least now, it made sense. They were anti-Vietnam War and anti-prisoners of war and all that stuff, yeah.
But it's like now, it's like, you might as well just put on that political party badge, right? It's like,
yeah, exactly, you know, right.
Even like freaking, I think it was Nine Inch Nails. Mm-hmm. Who is it that made that pro-Antifa song? Is it Nine Inch Nails or what's the other band? No, not Nine Inch Nails.
I'm not sure.
But one of these, it's like a industrial band or something, metal industrial band. I don't think it was Nine Inch Nails. It's something, I can't think of it. But so they made their pro-Antifa song, and then some of my friends went to one of their shows and had this big anti-Trump thing, and I'm like, damn, dude. We're here to listen to music, not freaking...
please just play the music, man.
Yeah, if it's in your lyrics, that's one thing, but don't freaking turn this into a political rally. But I think, you know, just to summarize, it just shows you that how polarized this country is that it's just, it's seeped into every facet of life, education, family, us being split up in music, like everything. It's like, you're either this or you're that, right? And according to the left, you're either a good guy or a bad guy. If you're a bad guy, you don't deserve to be here. I mean, I think that pretty much sums it up.
Yeah, I mean, they just keep drawing the lines in the sand. And yeah, a very close parallel to this is the sports mess. Because mess is just ubiquitous now. Like, you can't even – and I'm just done. Like, I never really was a huge sports fan, but I like basketball a bit.
Yeah.
And I can't even stand any of it. I've told every family member, I'm done. It's all gone. You can have – I'm done. I can't take it anymore. I just want to watch a game occasionally. I don't want to hear a diatribe. I don't want the kneeling. I don't want the court with Black Lives Matter.
Yeah, it's like you can't – it's just – it's like literally like full blown indoctrination. Like in any authoritarian government or society, you know, there's pictures of the great leader everywhere to remind you of that you're under their control, right? And mm-hmm. I feel like this is what it's at now. It's like they might as well just freaking. Well, they are putting posters everywhere. The stupid morals on the streets with de Blasio painting Black Lives Matter in front of Trump Tower, all that. It's like. All facets of life is now dedicated to this one message. Like, you can't even freaking open a kids channel without it. I mean, it's insane. It's just every facet of life now in your face. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like, I mean, if you want to avoid it, you move to freaking Idaho up in the mountain and turn off the technology. It's the only way to get peace from it.
Yeah, I'm starting to think the Amish have it more and more right all along. Because I can't even watch any TV anymore. I watch shows maybe from like 30, 40 years ago with my daughter sometimes because it's not just full-blown malice nonsense. I mean, you could just keep rattling it off, but you know, the usual stuff. Yeah. It's just every single show, it's about the trans character, some sort of bizarre gay agenda, how Trump's bad, how the family should really not be men and women, it should be...
I know. I've seen several of these new Disney ones where it's like, oh, this family's bad. We got to have like this very diverse family, whatever. I'm like, okay. I don't know, man, but
what do you do? I know before we go, I wanted to ask you more about the Antifa thing because you've had such firsthand experience. And I'm pretty sure I know the answer to this question, but how far do you see this thing going? Because I know we got CHOP or CHAZ out there, which is just a communist enclave in the former Republic of the United States. I don't know. But I mean, that's just proliferating. Well, so I just see it ramping up and getting worse. But you've been closer to that flame than me.
Well, if you look at Europe as an example, and I think it should be, what's going on in Europe is that Antifa has been accepted by the governments in a sense, right? Mm-hmm. So what goes on in Europe, especially in places like Germany, Denmark, you name it, what happens is that the local municipalities, if it's in an area that has like very far leftist local officials in some of these city councils and what have you not, what they do is that they'll direct money towards a community house or something like that, community project. What it really is to finance Antifa, right? That's what goes on. Because in Copenhagen, Antifa has several of these different buildings that are community buildings, and they're funded by the city, but they're given to Antifa in essence, right? Mm-hmm. Now, so indirectly, they're being funded, right? In Germany, Germany is probably the best example of what we're talking about here is that same thing. They're indirectly being funded by these far left parties with taxpayer money. And they don't really crack off down too much. The police doesn't really go after Antifa too much because they don't see it as a threat, right? And mm-hmm. the idea, even though like over 90% of all political violence comes from the left, but the thing is that Antifa can do what the government can't. Government can, at least for now, go out and beat you up, harass you, burn down your house to make you quiet, right? They can't do that. That wouldn't look too good, right? Sure. That's what's going on in Germany. But Antifa can. And that's what Antifa does. Police doesn't really go too much after them. The Secret Service doesn't really investigate them that much. You know, so it's kind of like Antifa is doing what the government can. And the government kind of goes like this. Because they're doing what we really want to do, but we can't. So we're going to kind of like, let them do their thing. They're doing our dirty bidding, right? Now, where do I see that here in the United States? Well, I mean, Antifa is already doing a lot of the things they've been doing in years in Europe. and I never thought was going to happen here, but it is. And I warned about it in Killing Free Speech Part 1, ironically. But I foresee that if, again, it doesn't even take Biden or any of these people to win the election, like Seattle, you know, San Francisco, a lot of these far-left cities, you're going to see, I mean, they're already turning a blind eye to Antifa. They're trying to whitewash what Antifa is doing. I mean, look at what's going on in Portland with these 60 days of riot. Oh, it's mostly peaceful, right?
Of course.
To it, ultimately, Antifa is going to become this unofficial, you know, bootstrapping, bootstomping political arm of this far left or Democratic Party that kind of like, exactly, or the red shirts. I mean, back in
In
the 20s and 30s, I mean, the communists had their version of the brown shirts, right? So they're going to be. They're going to be allowed to do what they do. And they already are, because think about it. All these people got caught rioting. They were all let out, right? A slap on the wrist. And what did a lot of these state attorneys and prosecutors do? They took it from, you know, being a charge of assault on a police officer or rioting assault. So, like, they pulled it all the way down to just, like, vandalism or something like that. Public
trespassing or something, yeah.
Exactly, right? I mean, they're – and so they're – you see what they're doing. So in the future, I really see, and this is where, listen, in Europe, I don't know if anybody knows what's been going on in Greece, but certainly in Europe, but in Greece, in Greece, Antifa kills people. Mm-hmm. They've executed people. There, if anybody wants to see, like, there's this fascist party called Golden Dawn, there's a video where you see these Antifa come up and literally execute two of the guys, right? In Europe, they kill people.
What's the name of this group one more time?
Golden Dawn.
Golden Dawn, like, okay.
All right. So a couple of their members were executed in the street by these Antifa or anarchists, whatever. But that's what you're going to see that in the United States at some point. That's the one thing we haven't seen yet, at least we've been told about, is that Antifa actually go out and start killing people.
You know, we're already seeing that small scale now where they got these... Well, yeah. These roadblocks just randomly, and people kind of slow down because they think it's the police. Because of course, Antifa's got their weapons and their combat fatigue, whole nine yards out there, and they say, "Oh, all lives matter, huh? Yeah, you're gone."
Exactly. Yeah, I mean, they slow the cars down, and the cars don't stop, or they don't beep, showing that they agree with them. They freaking start pounding on them, and they, before you know, they get pulled out of cars. That's where that Yahoo Navy sailor came up and pointed an AK-47, and lo and behold. This was Texas, so you shouldn't have done that. And the guy blasted him, rightfully so. But the point is that, yeah, it's just a matter of time before you start seeing Antifa actually killing people. That's the next step. They've gotten away with everything else so far. They've gotten away with burning down cities, dragging people out of cars, pummeling them. They've gotten away with all this stuff. You know, and if anything, history serves anything, if Antifa gets away with this, they're going to take it to the next step. And don't forget that Antifa, I don't know how many Americans are involved in that, but Antifa has quite a few people in Syria fighting with the Kurds. Okay? They're receiving their training. What's going to happen when these battle-hardened and battle-ready Antifa comes back?
I mean, that's a good point.
The most important take out of this, training is one thing, but if you've been in Syria, it's, you know, the step from like you killing a person is a big step to take. But once you've taken that step, it becomes a lot easier after that. Mm-hmm. These Antifa people, who knows how many of them are Americans, if they've been in that environment, to take that step is going to be that much easier when they come back to the Norbert. They're already back. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, yeah. So, that's a good point. Yeah. I kind of like the analogy you rose because I think that sounds so dead on. I kind of liken this to an NGO, like a non-governmental organization, or these military contractors that get sent into these different places because they're doing stuff that the sanctioned U.S. military that has to follow NATO or whatever can't do. I kind of think that's kind of the same thing that Antifa's become. They're not really part of the government. They're not really part of the military or whatever. They're just this, they're getting the funding. They're getting the setup. They're getting the get-out-of-jail-free card. So.
Exactly. And that, I mean, and it's, and that's what really, and I think that as the future goes on, if Americans don't start fighting back big time, people are, but if Americans don't really fight back this against this big time, this is the problem is only going to escalate to the point of where people are going to get killed. I mean, it's just, I mean, I think that's the bottom line is that in this country, in November, you got to think about what you're voting for. And number two, you got to start fighting these people, man. I'm not saying go out and shooting people, but I'm saying like confront them. You know what I mean? Industry, start organizing. And people are, you know, back to blue and some of these rallies, like start doing it. Because, you know, if you hand over the public space to them, you know, they're going to take over and you're done. That's really what it comes down to.
Yeah, it's a real uncomfortable scene because, I mean, I've had this conversation personally with the family where it's like, man, I'm just going to go out by myself when I go shopping for whatever, the store or whatever now, because it's kind of the point where you never know what you're going to run into. You might run into a stupid roadblock on the way home, and I'm not stopping. I'm not going to get gunned down like the several people that have. I'm not going to have my car beat on and all this mess, so.
Exactly, and it's probably not a coincidence that gun sales are through the roof either, right?
Yeah, I think I was reading that last show. July was like 70% increase or something with the Wix checks, I believe.
Yeah, I mean, wish I had gun stocks right now.
Yeah, that's true.
But I mean, yeah, I mean, it's who knows, but I guess it is what it is.
How can everybody avoid the censorship and follow what you do and check out your second part of this series here?
So if people go on killingfreespeech.com, you know, the movies are available there, and there are all the articles too about my adventures both here in Europe and Canada. So yeah, killingfreespeech.com, that's where people can find me.
Okay, so from there they can buy the videos, they can watch the content and everything?
Exactly. I even have DVDs for those who still go old school.
Yeah, I mean, that's probably the way to go. I got a pretty big DVD collection because the memory hole might just suck it away and you never see this stuff again. So
exactly. That's the irony of it all, right? We're going to have to like pass around DVDs and like in the shadows.
Yeah, I really do think it's going to come back to that DIY 90s stuff where people are going to be mailing a USB drive with this contraband banning free speech 1 and 2 on it or something.
I know, right? I know. Hey, man, it looks like we're going back to the DIY punk rock, like you said.
It does. It's scary. Well, thank you so much, Michael, for being on the program. In case you missed that, please check out killingfreespeech.com. And if you're driving or out there out and about, you can find all of his information and more at anomicgage.com. So please check out anomicgage.com for this week's guests and all the past episodes for now. All the video and audio is still there. As always, you can't do everything, but you can do something. So please get out there and make a difference. Till next time, be safe out there.
Thank you for listening to The Anomic Age, a John Age project. For past shows, further info, and to comment, go to AnomicAge.com. That's AnomicAge.com. Till next time, thank you for listening to The Anomic Age. I'm gonna go to bed.